Hello and welcome to another episode of the Shock Doctors Podcast. I'm Jim Smith. And we are the Shock Doctors. In this episode, we're going to be discussing Pearl, which is the prequel to Ty West's film from earlier this year, X. Sequels. No, because the first David Gordon Green Halloween was like episode 4 or 5 or something. And then obviously we did Kills. Yeah, unless Maxine comes out like next week, basically. We'll touch on the sequel hook later, but this film's about the title character, Pearl, unsurprisingly, who was the murderous old woman in X, played by Mia Goth, who also played the protagonist of X, Maxine. Yeah, well, didn't one of the other girls survive too? The, like, boom girl? Yeah, I think they both survive, but if you're going to anoint one of them the final girl, I imagine it would probably be Maxine. I am kind of curious to see how the third film is going to be, I don't know, about murder. I guess you can shoehorn murder and mayhem into just about anything, but it's not. Pearl is obviously a serial killer origin story, and Maxine, the character, was not also a murderer, although I guess potentially it could be something like during the events of X she snapped and now she's a porn star murderess, you know. I don't know. Maybe it'll be a Boogie Nights scale saga, and it'll be both. You know, who knows? Yeah. Yeah, this is episode 178 business, or you know, wherever the hell it ends up. Ha ha ha. Exactly. Yeah, very much a German Margaret White. And only gets worse from here. Where's the laugh track? And she proceeds to feed it to a gator. Yeah. Yeah. He is able to slurp food if brought to his face. I thought that based on how little he moved, they were just going to be like trying to spoon things into his mouth and nothing would go in or mostly not go in. Well, it's her sister-in-law. It's Howard's sister. Yeah. It's like, well, it's like a weird sort of almost mannequin face with eyes on it and stuff. Yeah, she's riding back from having seen the picture show, and the projectionist has clipped a frame out of one of the reels of the show she just saw, the movie. So she's riding her bike home, and the wind kicked up and pulled the little fragment of celluloid out of her overalls pocket and floating off into the corn. So that's how she encounters this scarecrow, which. So she climbs up on the pole that the scarecrow is on. It's got like steps. It's weird. And she asks it to dance and then hurls it to the ground and then begins dancing with it, starts making out with it, hurls it to the ground, screams at it, "I'm married." Yeah, well, it could do no such thing, but the flip side is apparently Pearl would not have taken issue with that because she proceeds to mount it. Straw. Yeah, cutting a switch to beat her with when she comes home. Yeah. Yeah, doesn't leave the doorstep for a distressingly long time. It's porn, yeah. turn vinegary. Yeah. Yeah, so he's he's waxing poetic about the commercial viability of porn at least 50 years before the first hints of that commercial viability were really making themselves known. So yeah, well, or you know, they were selling a few reels here and there to like perverts they were familiar with that they knew wouldn't report them to the police or whatever. And again, this is the other part of this trying to be the through line here is that Pearl does not seem repulsed by the idea of this being her route to stardom. Yeah. No, it's not her mother, it's Howard, which was a big head scratcher for me that we can maybe get into later. No, she's had this. Sure. Well, right. Yeah. The only reason I think it stuck is because we see basically most of this play out once or twice before, where Pearl is dreaming or daydreaming about Howard coming home. And then it's that same snippet, except it continues to him exploding like Quentin Tarantino in Django. I just like how you sound more like Herzog. Right. So once this two-person tirade reaches its climax, they get into basically a slap fight, which then culminates with Pearl Pearl sort of slamming her mother up against the mantle and, again, going full wail and scream in her face. And in the course of this, you know, the mantle is, coincidentally enough, above the fireplace where a mantle usually can be found, and the fire is lit. And soon, so is Mom's skirt. With a pot full of corn. Yeah, of her wounds or dehydration or starvation or some combination thereof. Yeah, who knows? Gross. Yes, I love flowing sexual fluids. And utterly baffling. But before she does that, she goes and talks to Dad, who, of course, has not moved since dinner and has watched his wife go up like a candle, get dragged down the basement stairs, and just left, I don't know, presumably to sit in his own filth for the better part of a day. Well, I guess half a day. Yeah, and this gives him his first opportunity to do his eyebrow work. Right. Yeah. Yeah. He didn't even imply that. It's not even a situation of she's this guileless rube who was taken in by his big romantic pitch. I mean, he talks about having been in Europe and that's where he got the porno and whatnot, but at no point does he even make empty promises about, like, I'm going to take you to Europe and we're going to be happy together? He's just like, yeah, that was fun when we fucked last night. Let me give you a ride home. And now she's like, why won't you take me to Europe? Well, I think he is not yet dead, but I think at this point he might as well be, because I don't think he's really putting active effort into driving away. I think it really is just momentum. Not really. I mean, she drags him out of the car eventually and then gives him another stab in the face with the pitchfork. And X also. Yeah, then she gets all dolled up and heads off to the audition. She meets Mitzi there. Mitzi is all, oh man, I didn't think you were gonna make it, and I'm glad you're here. And these are incredibly short and apparently very distressing auditions, because there's like three or four girls and young women who come out from they're doing it in a church too. They all come out looking incredibly distraught, and they're just talking back and forth like, right, well, exactly. Mitzi and Pearl are just kind of talking back and forth about, like, oh, isn't this exciting? And Mitzi says something like, I hope it's one of us, or I hope it's me, or whatever. And Pearl, with just a 1,000-yard stare, says, it has to be me. And like, Mitzi gives her an out. She's like, oh, you didn't mean to say that out loud, did you? It has to be me. She says it like two or three more times. Yeah. We don't want a MILF. We want barely legal, you know. Yeah, I feel like, and I mean, even this would have been slightly anachronistic because I feel like Clara Bow was the it girl in the 20s. So even that would have been a little too early in 1918. I don't think that was a term, but if he had just said like it factor or we want an it girl or whatever, that would have been close enough to where you're like, yeah, okay, you fudged it, but it's fine. But yeah, X factor, I think is definitely an anachronism. And if, even if it's not, you're right. It absolutely feels like one. Right. Yeah, avert your eyes. It's gotta be 5 to 7 minutes. And I think like relatively early on there is a cut back to Mitzi like beckoning for her to keep going, but after it cuts back to her following that, it's at least 5 uninterrupted minutes of just Pearl talking about how much she hates her life and how desperate she is for something else. And I'm not actually a good person. The reason I was so careful around other men and didn't want to hurt your feelings is because I knew that your family has the kind of life I want, and you could go back to that at any time, and I wanted to leave that possibility open for myself, even though you didn't really seem all that keen on going back. And that she, basically she confesses to the three murders, because we did elide this. She has smothered her father at this point. Right. So she confesses to three murders. And murder. Yeah. And this all just kind of culminates in Mitzi saying, "Well, I better be getting home now." And she keeps a lid on things surprisingly well, to the point where I almost thought she was gonna get away and then just never be seen again. Like, she decides not to confront Pearl. She just flees and goes on this tour or whatever. Because it's like, "You're not afraid of me, are you?" And she's just like, "No." It's very calm. It's not like, "What? No!" It's. Right. Yeah, I mean, if I thought it would have saved my life in that scenario, I would have had no compunctions about like going over and giving Pearl a hug. Like, I love you. You've done nothing wrong. I'll come help you clean up the bodies in a minute. I gotta go home first. Like. Yeah, she says all the right things, and it looks just for a second like she's gonna be able to walk away no problem. And then Pearl's just like, "You always get what you want, don't you?" I was like, "Ah, oh, shit." And I almost wonder, now they set it up to where we're meant to assume that, oh yeah, she's definitely gonna get it, because what the guy in the church says is like, "We're looking for someone younger and more blonde." And like, well, okay, fucking duh. But on the other hand, Mitzi, like, even beyond her high wire performance leading up to this moment, where she's convincing mostly that, "Oh yeah, no, this is no problem for me. I'm not freaked out." When she's saying, you know, like two or three times, she says, "But no, Pearl, I didn't get it." I still don't know whether she was telling the truth. I mean, she may have been. Right. Right. No. And the tears start rolling down too. I was thinking, like, just imagining Ty West. Almost like the WKUK sketch you brought up in the last episode. Except her mouth is fucking snapped shut, but we see the teeth, and it's just like, happier. No, happier. Okay, now tears. And that's pretty much what we see. And then after the crit. Right. Yeah. After the end of the credits, we get the aforementioned sting for Maxine. We have this VHS-looking 4:3 boxy frame and very distinctive obsession by Animotion. One of the most quintessentially 80s openings to a song, playing over like helicopter footage of behind the hills where the Hollywood sign is, and as it's coming around, instead of saying Hollywood or Hollywood Land, even, it says Maxine with three X's in the middle. And then we get a title drop for Maxine coming soon. And so that's how we know that's what's coming next. Yeah. Right.
I want to be special, dancing up on the screen like the pretty girls in the pictures.
I will not let you leave this farm again.
I'm worried there may be something real wrong with me.
Rumor has it they only take one gal per town.
Hello, listeners. It's Jim, here as always during the break to tell you some stuff you probably already know. Please follow us on Twitter at ShockDoctorsPod, on Facebook at facebook.com/shockdoctorspod, or check us out on Apple Podcasts. The podcast is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got an idea for a movie you'd like us to check out, feel free to send us a DM on social media or email us at shockdoctorspod@gmail.com. And now, back to the show.
We're looking for someone with X Factor.
It has to be me.
How about a film nobody else has seen?
Is it legal?
It will be eventually.
I know what I've done. Bad things. Terrible, awful, murderous things.
Help me!
I want to be loved from as many people as possible. But truth is, I'm not really a good person.
And we're back. So I want to touch on something that we didn't talk about at all during the synopsis, which is the pandemic flavoring in the movie. Exactly. Yeah. So Spanish flu, it was a pandemic, although I think they mostly just used the term epidemic at the time. Basically, the last time there was a proper pandemic prior to COVID, really. Obviously, there have been a variety of highly dangerous infectious diseases in the century between them, but in terms of spread and impact, right, they really only have each other to compare themselves to. So it was an opportunity to kind of do COVID stuff while being, you know, period relevant and accurate. Now, I liked it at first because there's just this talk about, and again, at the beginning, it's not really overstated. It's just occasional like, oh, well, better stay away from them. They might have the bug. Or Pearl's mother is constantly talking about, I don't want you bringing germs back here. And there's even when Pearl goes into town, people are wearing masks and... Right. Well, so I'll get to what broke it for me, but I even like it up to the point where she goes into the movie theater and she's in there with her mask on, and then she pulls it down to like take a swig of her dad's medicine for some reason. I mean, it's some kind of like morphine compound, so I guess she can get stoned with it, but it's just it was kind of strange. But yeah, she like pulls the mask down, takes a swig, and puts it back up. Up to that point, I was right. Up to that point, I was on board. There are two moments later in the movie that kind of in conjunction turned me off on it. The first time is when she goes inside with the projectionist, her first visit, and he says something like, "When this pandemic's over, I'm gonna go back to Europe." And again, I don't think for the most part they use the term pandemic. I think that's an anachronism, and I don't know. For at some point that just like that was the straw that broke the camel's back. It's like, okay, now we're just talking about the fact that the pandemic has inhibited travel plans. It's just, that's a little too much. And then the Yeah, I think so. No, I think it might have been in The Cursed. I think that, yeah. That's because it's a terrible title. And it was yet another one where it had like a pretty decent working title, and then they're just like, no, we're gonna make it lame. The second moment, and the one that really just shot it dead for me, was when the projectionist is driving Pearl home after they've slept together, you know, the next morning, and they pass a soldier on the road, like just walking like he's walking home. And at first, I thought this was going to be Howard, and he was going to show up at the farmhouse with her lover there, and also her mother having been burned, if not to death quite yet, then nearly, so on. Turns out it's not him, so it's irrelevant. But the projectionist asks her something like, "Oh, you know, do you know him?" And she says, "I don't think so." And he says, "Well, you know, people wearing masks all the time, it's impossible to tell who anybody is." Like, okay, fuck you. And it's like that's a bridge too far, Ty. You done did it. You overshot. Yeah, but you see, all of that could have happened without him talking about masks and not being able to recognize people behind masks. I mean, that would have been better. I still think that might have been my tipping point. I still think I would have been, eh, no, too far, too much. Right. Right. Yeah. Relative to the long take that we did talk about in some detail during the synopsis, I'm with you. I love long takes in principle, and I always want them to work. And I don't think this one is like a crashing failure or anything. And this is no fault of the performance. I did get to the point where like, okay, wrap it up. You know, like, I think this has run too long. And I don't know if it's just the fact that the dialogue was maybe too samey for the speech. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's samey both inside of the monologue and also across different speeches, because it's a lot of this is stuff that she's already said either to herself or effectively to herself, but technically to the animals, or, to her mother. When they have the big argument that culminates in her mother catching fire. So it's kind of almost doubly redundant in that way. And yeah, it didn't work. You know, again, I love long takes in principle. I love it even more when they work. One of my favorite long takes and just one of my favorite shots or stretches of a movie in general is in Hunger, the Steve McQueen movie. Where it's literally that 18 minute. I don't remember whether I looked it up or whether I just timed it, but it's an 18 minute two shot of Michael Fassbender and Liam Cunningham sitting on opposite sides of a table, just talking to one another in the prison where Fassbender's character is being held. And that's incredible. And it works perfectly, and there's nothing wrong with it. On the other hand, this long take was 2.5 times at least shorter, and it didn't work for me. Elizabeth Moss, yeah. Ha Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. The bigger question for me is if we're meant to believe that this Susie Homemaker persona, again, like you say, not full-scale personality, if we're meant to believe that this persona has won out or that Pearl has decided it should and is trying to make it that way, then where do we get the turn back to murder? And furthermore, almost an even bigger question for me, in fact, forget almost, this is a bigger question for me, how does Howard get into the act? Like, it's, you know, we get no indication whatsoever that he is also a psychopath, you know, that he's got something broken inside of him as of this point. Obviously, we saw what he ended up being. So if we just go by that, it's like, yeah, okay, he was probably nuts or whatever. But we see no indication of that when he returns. I mean, he just looks straight up horrified the last time we see him before we get that, again, long take, but this time of just a rictus grin with tears. Exactly. So he seems utterly horrified. It's not even, it didn't necessarily have to be like, finally, we can be ourselves in front of one another. I too am a murderer. But even if it had just been something as simple as like, okay, well, I'm going to help you clean this up. We better get started or something like that. And then you could at least see like, okay, maybe the decrepit old couple in X, Howard was never as much of a psychopath as Pearl. Maybe I buy that arc. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a mistake. Yeah, I don't think she believes that. But yeah, it's not even like she's just been stuck on farms all her life. It's the same one. It is the farm from X. There's the shot of Howard walking up the path with the gate and the sign over top of the gate, which is, you know, we get that shot of the van driving onto the property in X. It's framed the same way. And, you know, that's good on you, Ty. You did that right. But that's the point. It's exactly the same place. The farm, just like them, has spent the last 60 years decaying. So, like you, I'm not really champing at the bit for a fourth movie in there somewhere. And even if I were, I don't know what they would do with it, except it'd just be like X, except the vagrants or visitors probably wouldn't be making a porno, and Pearl and Howard would be younger than X and older than Pearl. Yeah, and we would see how Howard is brought around and how Pearl gets back to her murderous ways, but that's stuff that should have been, at least in the case of Howard, should have been in Pearl, at least to some extent, and is not enough for another installment, I think. Well, no, that's impossible. Yeah. Yeah, that Pearl would be one thing. Howard, I don't think would work at all. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Although apparently Marty was very disturbed by Pearl. Scorsese talked at length in an interview. Nope. I think the idea is that she goes in there to sponge bathe him and then proceeds to bathe herself. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember missing any dialogue, so I probably did. And I know the scene you're talking about, and I got the same whiff that you did. But I at this point, no, I don't remember what the line actually was. But you, it's, again, I don't think you were off base because I picked up on the same thing. Yellow bricks, yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Right. It was kind of strange because going into this movie, I didn't read too much about it, again, deliberately, like always. But from what I did see, I kept hearing a bunch of these names getting thrown around. I kept hearing, like, Douglas Sirk and Powell and Pressburger and all that stuff. Now, I will be the first to admit my consumption of Sirk and Powell and Pressburger is as yet below par, but I'm broadly familiar with what those films look like. Well, right, and also because, as we saw in X, when he's doing his 70s shtick, Ty West is an homage perfectionist, and you'd think he'd have the knack, but I guess maybe it doesn't translate from his love for the 70s and these lush Technicolor panoramas of, again, Sirk or Powell and Pressburger. And, I mean, you do see some of it, like you say earlier on, with that ridiculous Technicolor alley, or just the opening montages. But to the degree that it even exists in the movie at all, it's all front-loaded and then kind of drops out. You get one kind of last hurrah of it in the No Man's Land dance number during her audition. But for the most part, after the first 25 to 30 minutes, that stuff kind of just drops out of the movie. I think we deliberately avoid recommending masterpieces because, like, oh, well, people know that one already. The other issue with you cheekily saying that Pearl doesn't have the X factor is that it would also imply that you liked X a little bit more than you did, so that would be a problem also. So my recommendation is going to be one of those very tenuous ones, and I've already talked about it. I'm just going to recommend Hunger. The sole reason is because it does what this movie fails to do with its long take, which is succeed, I guess, with the long take. Hunger is about a member of the IRA, as in Irish Republican Army, who has been captured by the Brits and thrown into prison, and he's on a hunger strike. I don't remember if he's the only one, but nevertheless, he's on a hunger strike, and this is not a plot-driven movie, so I feel even less worried about giving spoilers than I normally would. The movie ends with him dying. He has starved to death. His hunger strike has reached its logical end. But the scene that I talked about earlier, it's Liam Cunningham plays a priest who comes to talk to, I think the character's name is Bobby Sands. Again, it's Michael Fassbender. Comes to talk to him. And the authorities have let him in there because basically they think maybe he can talk him into eating and, you know, giving up the hunger strike. And it becomes clear relatively quickly the priest is also Irish. He's not necessarily fully on board with the IRA program, but he's entirely sympathetic and he's not really trying to talk him out of anything. But they just sort of talk about, I mean, everything over the course of 18 minutes, just good and evil, and life and death, and the struggle. And again, it's incredible. The whole movie's very good. Steve McQueen in general is great. I'm a big fan of Shame and 12 Years a Slave, and I liked Widows a lot too. Not quite as much as I had hoped I would, but yeah, Hunger. Not a horror movie, but horrifying. It's incredibly bleak. I mean, like I said, it ends with the main character dying of starvation deliberately. Yes. Yes. Well, until Maxine comes out, we can put Mia Goth back. Right. We can put Mia Goth on the shelf. Unless she puts out another horror movie in between them. But until next time, I'm Jim Smith. And we are the Shock Doctors. We'll see you later.
As always, we have some acknowledgments. Our music was composed by Will Connor. Audio for the bumpers was taken from Pearl Official Trailer HD A24, uploaded by A24. All rights reserved. Our next episode will be up on Sunday, October 16th, and we will be discussing Smile, which follows a therapist who is haunted by smiling figures wherever she goes. See you then.